Willie and D. Mays coming your way in just a few minutes. This will be a short segment because Mark Byington, the new head basketball coach at Vanderbilt, is going to join us at 12:15. We're looking forward to that. We're wrapping up our assessment of Game 7 and the champion Florida Panthers. And part of this discussion has to include Connor McDavid. I will remember, Adam, the look on his face, the exhaustion. You know, he played, it seemed like, the entire third period. It also illustrates what a team game hockey is, because as much as you want to push your horses, you still can't play them even half of the game. Unless maybe a defenseman can, but they basically tried to do it last night, especially when they were down. But it still has a cost to it. Like in baseball, your best player can't come up more than one every nine times, whereas in basketball, you can feed your best player every time down the court, if you want. You can keep him in there the whole game. So McDavid, the exhaustion, the, oh, I'm so close, I can taste it, but we didn't get it. Where do they go from here, I think, is a big question around the league. It's a great drama, though, because I do feel like he'll be back. But you could ask the question, will it be in Edmonton that he wins it? Because Edmonton has so many big questions to answer here. Draisaitl is up for an extension, I think, in a year.
And he can sign it starting July 1st.
And they have to be, I think, strategic in how they do it. They're obviously not going to let Draisaitl go. But they have to try to leave room to put the complementary pieces around those two. And that is not an easy thing, even though the cap is going up. But you asked a great question about big picture with McDavid.
So I saw this from the NHL. So now that McDavid has won the Conn Smythe Trophy, these are the players in NHL history that have won the Conn Smythe Trophy, which is playoff MVP, Art Ross Trophy, which is the scoring title, most points, a Hart Trophy, the MVP award, and the Ted Lindsay Award, which is the most outstanding player award in the regular season, voted on by the players. So it's the players' MVP award. These are the players who have won all four awards at least once. Connor McDavid, Alex Ovechkin, Sidney Crosby, Patrick Kane, Evgeny Malkin, Mario Lemieux, Wayne Gretzky, Guy Lafleur, and Bobby Orr.
So he's already among the all-time greats,
yes.
And he's only 27. Yet he hasn't won a championship. So I think that is a great – and we might have to leave it here because I think Coach is going to call us here in just a moment. We want to make sure we stay on time, and we will come back to it. But I think that is something to ponder, is just like Jordan, it took, what, 7 years for Jordan to win his first title? I see that same kind of struggle with McDavid. Where
took
every
Ovechkin
year,
13 years.
Took Ovechkin, and he only got to the final.
Only
so
got
far.
There
He's
once.
Still playing. He's only been there once.
It seems unlikely he'll get back based
seems
on
unlikely.
The trajectory of the Capitals.
And you never know. But, you know, how does a player get judged in that? But you have to have, in hockey especially, the complementary players. You have to have the depth. And that will be a big question going forward for the Oilers and for McDavid as he continues to mature. But a great quest. And, man, he was awesome to watch try to go for it there. All right, let's catch back up. We'll get to Mark Byington here on the other side of the break. And don't forget, we'll get heavy into some things that Barry Trotz said yesterday on his interview with Jerry.
Swing by Puckett's Restaurant,
where down-home tradition meets a vibrant atmosphere from their mouthwatering
with things.
Slow Smoke Barbecue to comforting
and
classics and live music. Go to
thegamenational.com/deals
now and get a $50 gift card
40, 12,
to Puckett's. Mark Byington
for only $25.
On the other side. Stay tuned.
All supplies
we're here
last.
On
so you get
50
for 25.
This is with Nashville's
best deal
special guest
week,
star, Adam
Puckett's
Vingan.
Restaurant.
In just a moment, we'll be joined by the new head coach for the Vanderbilt Commodore basketball team, Mark Byington, who's got a lot of heavy ties to the state of Virginia. He grew up in Virginia. Was once an assistant coach at Virginia and also Virginia Tech, and that was sandwiched around a stint under the great Bobby Kremins, who was a longtime head basketball coach at Georgia Tech, but he worked for him at Charleston, College of Charleston, one of the great mid-major programs going back a ways, and of course came from James Madison over to Vanderbilt. So we're looking forward to chatting with him, but Adam, you being a college basketball nut from ACC territory, looking forward to catching up with Mark Byington as he gets into the SEC.
Great, great team last year he had with James Madison University. 32-4 record, if I'm not mistaken. Won a first-round game. It was technically an upset because they were the lower-seeded team. They defeated Wisconsin in the first round. But it wasn't really an upset. A lot of people picked James Madison to win that game because he put together a solid program at JMU, another mid-major school on the rise, and I think Vanderbilt got a good one.
Yeah. Now, don't mention that you're a Duke fan.
I will not mention what his last game at JMU went, how that went, because I enjoyed it. He certainly
I had them, and this is well before I knew he was going to be Vanderbilt's next coach. I had James Madison winning that game in
a
the
lot
bracket.
Of people
my
did,
sister-in-law,
actually.
My sister-in-law is a JMU grad, and so I had them winning there, but it didn't happen. But all's well because he is now the coach of the Commodores. Mark Byington joins the show here on 102.5 The Game. Coach, thank you so much for joining us today. I know you've been really, really busy.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, I caught wind of that last little thing, and there was some good memories of the NCAA tournament, but the Duke game wasn't one of them. it was a lot went into that, and giving them credit, the guards for Duke, and I know one I was about to get drafted, they were so much faster in person than they were on film, and we were a step slow, and they were a step fast. So sometimes that happens.
Now, Jared McCain couldn't miss a shot in that game for Duke, but James Madison had a great program, great season for you there, and I know a lot of Vanderbilt fans are happy to have you coaching their team now.
Yeah, Coach.
It's great. It's great to be here. It's I think I'm on about 3 months now, and it's been a lot of stuff that's gone into this 3 months, but. You know, even I could say this even a month or two ago, every day is getting better. And now that I'm 3 months into it, it's the same thing. Every single day is getting better.
Well, Coach, let's start there because you had a lot of work to do the day you took the job because in this day and age, as we see, really around all college sports, and we've been focusing a lot on the College World Series in baseball, you see what effect the transfer portal and the NIL has had and just shaping rosters no matter who you're coaching. But you inherited basically a team that you had to build the roster from scratch. So have you had a chance to come up for air at all and just sort of sit back and enjoy it?
There hasn't been any time to kind of reflect or sit back and enjoy it. It's, you talk about the NCAA tournament, and really it was an hour after the Duke game. You know, I was doing every single thing possible and full steam ahead with Vanderbilt. So there wasn't any kind of pause in between or reflection in between. And since I've got my feet in Nashville, it's been running ever since. So, you know, with the team, I'm returning one scholarship player from last year. And, you know, we brought in a lot of good transfers and recruits, and I'm excited about this group. But I'll tell you, like, my life feels so much better now. We're practicing. And so for 2.5 weeks here, we've been practicing with my current team. And that's my joy. That's what makes it fun. And we're getting better. And they're on the court and we're working hard. And everything before that, you know, sometimes tedious, sometimes demanding or whatever you want to say into it. But now that we're on the court, it feels like the world's spinning around for me again. I mean, everything's great.
So I guess tell me where you start. That's a really interesting just coaching question is you get a new group of guys that hasn't played together. I can remember as a freshman at Vanderbilt, we had a new coach, so the system was new. Eddie Fogler was the coach at the time, taking over for CM Newton, and the system was new for everybody, but we had three or four seniors, three or four juniors, like the traditional classes back then, so you had a lot of built-in people that were familiar with being a college player at Vanderbilt, etc. So where do you start with a group like this, and how much can you see progress every day?
Well, that's a good point. So, you know, even a couple of years ago when most of your roster returned, even if it was a coaching change, you knew your teammates and, you know, you knew your city, you knew where you lived and there's some comfortability there. I mean, this is a lot of newness for every single person, including me. And so where do we start? It's, you know, first off, we make sure we're staying with the fundamentals and the skills and what they're going to need and how we're going to play. And then they got to learn the language and what we call things and then how that works and learn each other, learn their teammates. And so as of yesterday, it was a practice number 11. And from where we are right now, from practice number 1 to practice 11, is huge steps. And I see them getting better and better. the frustration that you experience right now for me is we're only allowed 4 hours a week of being on a court with them. And so they get 4 hours with the strength coach and 4 hours a week with us. And they got to do a lot of stuff on their own. And there's availability with great workouts and pickup games, things like that. But every time practice ends, they're saying the same thing. I'm like, I wish we'd go a little bit more. But we're going in the right direction. And our goal from the first practice says, look, this is every single day get better. And then be better tomorrow than you were today. Keep going like that. We'll do 8 weeks this summer. They'll have a little break, and then we'll come back in September. We'll be a different team in September by the time everybody gets back.
Vanderbilt head men's basketball coach Mark Byington joining us here on Willie and D-Mace. Mark, I want to ask you about one of your transfers in particular, A.J. Hoggard. That was a key player for Tom Izzo's Michigan State teams for a few years. You would have seen him in person, of course, when JMU started off the NCAA season with a huge upset on the road in East Lansing. What did you like about A.J. Hoggard that made you want to bring him into your program?
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that really shakes him. And, you know, while I'm picturing, you know, what the future is going to entail for us and the places we got to go in the SEC and the environment. And, you know, he's from Philadelphia. I mean, he's Philadelphia tough. You know, he played from Izzo and what he went through at Michigan State with the great teams and leading them and being responsible for those. So, I mean, we got a grown man playing guard, and nothing's really going to shake him. So what I see in him is we can trust him. We can put the ball in his hands. And it was a great fit. I mean, he loves the fact that there's been great guards that played here before at Vanderbilt, and he sees a lot of them playing in the NBA. He loved our style fit of playing fast in an NBA style with ball screen oriented offense. And that's where he wants to go. He's driven to win. It's not like he wants to come in and have a great year himself. He's been in the NCAA tournament. You know, he's won some games in the NCAA tournament. And those things are valuable for us. So I'm going to lean on him for all the experiences and also lean on him the fact that I think no matter the situation, he's been there before. And that's about as good as values in getting a point guard.
Talking to Mark Byington, new head coach, Vanderbilt. So, Coach, I'm curious, too, because it's still fairly new, this whole transfer portal situation where you have so much turnover on the rosters. How did you find it recruiting players out of the portal to Vanderbilt specifically, with the academic standards and the fact that, you know, Vanderbilt is probably, their foundation isn't as much with transfers traditionally, but now it's almost like everybody's been thrown into this world. So how did you find that, is, you know, with the academic situations that you had to deal with?
Well, with the academic, I heard a lot of people kind of referring to it, you know, like you're in the SEC and obviously we're the best academic school. But a lot of people were talking to me about it or referring to it like it was going to be a negative. And I couldn't even see the negative in it. I couldn't see it being something. Now, is it true we can't recruit every player in the country? Yes, it is true. But if you're a young man who wants to play in the best conference in the country and get elite academics, there is nobody else that can compete with us. And so there are those players out there. So the academic, it wasn't a hurdle. I thought it was something that enhanced us and not a negative. And so when we're going after transfers or high school players or whatever else, you know, if they say they don't want to go to school and they don't care about school, well, look, Vanderbilt will be the place for them. But if they say they want to play in the best conference in the country, we got that. If they say they want to live in one of the best cities in the world, we got that. And then if they say they care about school and want one of the best educations, we got that. So we don't compete against anybody else if you want to say having those three things. And we brought in 12 players in the spring for recruiting weekends, and 11 of them committed to Vanderbilt. So that's a pretty good percentage, and people saw everything we saw.
Great, great percentage there. That's an interesting stat. Coach, as you look ahead, and I know at this point, you probably haven't had time, you're just trying to get everything started, But in a perfect world, as everything is moving so fast, what is your vision of what the right balance is of high school recruits as opposed to transfers as you build the optimum type of roster?
Well, so we've been busy right now. We had a big high school recruiting weekend last weekend, and we got one coming up. And the college athletics is going to change this year. So this is going to be the last year that there's going to be the COVID extra year for college athletes. And what you're going to lose in college sports this year is a lot of grad students who have the extra year and the true seniors. So you're going to lose a lot of players out of it. Like right now, college basketball, like any other college sports, is old and there's older guys in it. It's going to go back to high school this year. And where there's going to be more impactful players on the court, more opportunities. And if we had to kind of envision a roster, I would love to have somewhere between 2 to 4 incoming high school players. At the same time, I want to make sure if we bring those high school players in, that if they're not going off to the NBA, that year two, they're still wearing a Vanderbilt uniform, because we're going to develop them, get them good, and try to keep them around. But the goal is to have high school players come start here and they finish here. And that's what we got to work on, because it's a challenge in college athletics right now where guys are moving a lot, that we got to make sure we come them in, develop them. And that's my favorite thing in coaching. And I know the fans like that too. The fans like watching them come in as 18-year-olds and then watching them finish up and then walk across the stage when they're seniors.
Do you think it will cycle back that way, Mark? Because that's one thing I know as a guy that had a great experience at Vanderbilt, and I wasn't a great player, but I cherish the memories of and the players that I met who became lifelong friends. And you lose a little bit of that when you bounce around, I would imagine, even though there's more benefits and there's a lot of positives, I'm sure, for the opportunities that somebody has if they transfer, right? But how do you think this will cycle as we evolve? Because this is all so new.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I hope it comes back to, you know, where there's continuity and there's young men that started at university and finished the university. I do think there's a sadness to it where a lot of, you know, people go to college and they have a place to call home, and they can look at it and say, all right, I got a place to go back to, homecoming weekend and these types of things. If you're going to so many different universities, I don't know if you ever have that connection. And what we want is we want players to come here and be all in. And if they go through adversity, we're going to help them get through it. We want them to stay and try to get them to, you know, have that feeling of this is home. You know, this is the place that's always going to be your home, and not always look around and try to go somewhere else, whether it might be something for somewhere else for more money or more playing time or whatever else, that be all in here, invest with us, and this is going to be the best place for you while you're in college. But I guarantee it's going to be the best place for you after college with a Vanderbilt degree, and then also being able to come back to Nashville and Vanderbilt and be able to see people who were along that journey with you and really care about you.
I want to ask you about one particular guy that has played for you before, Jalen Carey, who played for your James Madison team. Does it help having somebody who knows how you operate as maybe as a guy who can sort of set the example, even though he's still a pretty young player, for the other guys where it's also new?
Yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, he's 18 years old still. And if you look at him, he's 6'9 and a half, and he's 270 pounds. You're like, that's not what an 18-year-old looks like. But he's 18 years old, but he's the most experienced on our team as far as drills and practices and terminology. So it's a little unique that's there. He's going to be really good. You know, people don't know how good he is, and I can speak on behalf because I was around him every day last year. And if we went against Big Ten teams or whoever else, I mean, he's a physical presence out there. And but so young, so much more room to improve. But if you do look at him on the court right now, during one of our practices, he's kind of leading things, which I like for him. But at the same time, it's kind of scary when the 18-year-old's out there leading your team a little bit.
Mark, I'd be curious for your just, you know, you know, 30,000-foot view, I guess, of just the SEC in general. Now, you're no stranger to scheduling tough opponents in your previous stops, but we know that what the SEC represents, the number of high-seeded teams they've had in the tournament, the pedigrees of the coaches in the league, and the history, the national championships that have been won. What's most exciting to you about taking on that challenge of facing, you know, some of the best teams in the country on a regular basis?
Well, I mean, you said it right. It's a challenge, and some people run from challenges, and some people are excited about them, and I'm excited about them. And I'm trying to find guys that are on this team that are excited about the challenge. Trying to win an SEC road game is difficult, and we got to, you know, embrace that. You know, we got to build Memorial Gymnasium up to be the hardest playing place in the SEC. And it's going to be a lot with the players on the court and winning and getting that going. But it's a personality trait of myself and the guys on the team. We're not scared of challenges. It's great coaches. It's great teams. It's great players. Well, bring it on. That's what we want. And you know, if we don't want easy. And we know it's going to be difficult. And to have a timeline on how we're going to build it is kind of difficult to say anything, but except we're going to try to win this year. And like, it's not a rebuilding year. We're trying to win this year. I want to get this team in the NCAA tournament as fast as possible, and I want to make a run in the NCAA tournament. So that could start now. And to say we're looking at anything else or thinking about anything else but that is untrue. And then also, it's unfair. I got guys with their last season college eligibility here, came here as grad transfers, and they don't want to rebuild, and neither do I. Like, it's, hey, let's get going now, and let's get as good as we possibly can, and then let's see where it falls.
Great stuff. Coach, thank you very much for spending a few minutes with us. Let's do this again down the road as you continue to get settled in Nashville. And so thanks a lot for the time, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. Awesome stuff. Mark Byington, the new head coach at Vanderbilt. So many other things we could ask him about, but some really intriguing things there. And you can tell with that last answer, that was a good question, kind of where he took it. When you're bringing in grad transfers, you're not selling them on, yeah, this is a rebuilding year, in a couple years we're going to be really good. Like, why would you want to come to that? Like, you're coming right in hoping for an opportunity to play and hopefully have success.
And he laughed off my Duke dig before we went on. So I appreciate that, Mark.
That was good stuff. All right, Mark Byington, head coach. We appreciate his time. When we come back, we'll sort of digest that a bit, and we'll talk a little football as well before the hour is up, and then a heavy Predators hour during the 1 o'clock hour this afternoon. This is Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Willie and D-Mace continues here on 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick and Adam Vingan. Once again, thanks to Mark Byington, head coach, Vanderbilt Commodores. A lot of great themes of just college sports these days. One scholarship player returning, and I can't even remember which guy it is, honestly, but if you looked at press releases from Vanderbilt throughout the last 3 months, graduate transfer from here, transfer from there. He mentioned one of the players he brought with him, basically, from James Madison, which used to be kind of a faux pas. It was considered kind of, you don't do that when you change jobs, bring players with you. Now, nobody would even think twice just because this is how it goes. This is how they roll. But so what did you think, Adam? You're a guy, you went, I believe, all 4 years of your college to American U, right?
Yes.
So what do you think of all the hopping around that athletes are doing these days? Where we talked about it earlier. There might, in a couple years, be just as many players that play at three schools than there are that stay for 4 years at one school.
Yeah.
This is just me speculating. I don't have any facts to back that up, but I feel like that's how it's going.
Yeah, it does feel like that. And look, I am romantic about the days of college basketball where you would get to know, like you were talking about with Mark, as a member of the Vanderbilt basketball team, it would become a family, right? You would get to know these players. They would grow up together, you know. And, you know, it would, like, you know, senior day was a big deal because there would be three, four, five guys who would, you know, be, you know, be honored during their last home game. Now some teams don't even hold senior days anymore.
Because why would you? Yeah.
Because they don't have any seniors, or it certainly feels that way. But yeah, there's part of me that likes the transfer portal. Like, it's really interesting to see players, you know, have control over their situations, and you know, they're, you know, I can speak to, again, just because of my fandom, Duke lost 7 players in the transfer portal, and you know, multiple, you know, players who were just, you know, just completed their freshman year, because they're bringing in a highly touted recruiting class led by the number one recruit in the country, Cooper Flagg. So there were a lot of spots that weren't going to be open. So a lot of players left, and it was kind of hard to take. Like, these are guys that I liked and wanted to get to know as a fan, and now they're gone. Like, so you don't get attached to players the way that you used to.
Think about, I don't know where you were. This might have been even before you really dove into knowing all the players at Duke. But from my generation, I was still an active college player, so to speak, at this time. But the 1992, one of the greatest college basketball games of all time, the Christian Laettner.
Bobby Hurley, Bobby Christian Laettner, Grant Hill.
Right.
Yes.
So that 92 game, the Christian Laettner buzzer beater against Kentucky, you had the 4 seniors for Kentucky that their numbers are in the rafters. Not because they were great players, Darren Feldhaus and Sean Woods and Richie Farmer, John Pelfrey. But they were just beloved because the crowd fell in love with the underdog kind of nature of the way they played. And, of course, they had Jamal Mashburn as well, who was a great player.
Aminu Timberlake.
Yes, that was a great, great trivia from that game. That was the Aminu Timberlake game.
Who did Christian Laettner step on? Aminu Timberlake.
Right. But Christian Laettner, there would be no 30 for 30, I hate Christian Laettner, whatever it's called, if he didn't stay for all 4 years. Right. So you just that is an era gone by. And I did hear Coach Bryington say that he's hopeful that it settles down a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful as well, but I just want it to be known that you do lose something.
Yes.
As a player, even though you have this great freedom that you never had before.
I think one thing that might help, it's a small thing, and maybe I think it will help, is I think this is the final season of the COVID-19 eligibility, like getting that extra year.
Yes. He mentioned that.
Yes. So, like, that will play into it as well. Like, they just – those players won't have those extra years.
You don't have 24- or 25-year-old guys in the game.
But, like, you know –
can help.
Is it worth having, like, a cap on the number of times you can transfer? Is that something that
– I just think caps and things like that, it's hard to legislate that unless you have, like, a players' union and a collective bargaining, which maybe that'll happen someday.
Right, because at this point, like
– it's going the other way. It's going, like, there's even more freedom. Like, I had a coach tell me the other day – that he thinks that it's not out of the realm that for college basketball, for all winter sports, you might even gain the right to be able to transfer from one team at the Christmas break, at the semester break, and then play for another team after the Christmas break.
That would be absurd.
That would be a new level. Yeah, but from a rules standpoint and a law standpoint, what's to stop you?
No, I hear you. And it certainly, like I said, I think that's you. I think you've nailed it. When it comes to just the thing with college basketball or college sports in general was because there was the players did not have the empowerment that they have now, which I think it's good that players are more empowered now than they used to be. But because there were more restrictions on movement, player movement in college, you got to know the players, you know, that you watched as a fan, and there was always some sort of connective tissue. You know, one guy graduates, but there's still another guy there, you know, and then the new class comes in. I was reminded of this yesterday while watching a very entertaining news conference by my guy JJ Redick, new coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. I mean, he was a 4-year player at Duke.
Right. Another guy that everybody remembers as a college player because he was in a high-profile program, and he was a great player for a long time.
Yes, and like now it's less about that, And there are some examples, and some of it is just absurd. Like, I think like Caleb Love, for example. Caleb Love started his career at North Carolina, transferred to Arizona, played for Arizona last year. It must have been his fourth year of eligibility, and now he's coming back for a fifth year. It's like, very few players are doing that now. Because as you know, I guess the flip side of that is because of the NIL, players who may not have the NBA careers that you know can stay in college longer
and the COVID rule that gives you the extra free year basically.
Right, like the G League the NBA's developmental league feels like it's sort of, you know, it's going to kind of go the way of the dinosaur a little bit because that's how certain players could make money earlier. They could leave college and go to the G League, you know, formerly the D League, right? And make money as a professional in a basically a minor league setting. But now that NIL has come in, the purpose of the G League, it's lost its purpose. It's not – I don't know how – I mean, there are still a lot of players that get drafted into the NBA that go through the G League, but I feel like those numbers are dwindling because of NIL.
Yeah, and you certainly get a bigger spotlight. It's kind of more fun. You feel like you're playing for something bigger if you're staying in college and making comparable money to what you would – face in the G League where nobody's really outside of maybe that small town your player. I don't even know where they play some of these games. Bridgeport, Connecticut, I think is the next one.
Well, let's think of some.
But
you know,
it's not going to be on the SportsCenter shows, right? Like college basketball. Your games aren't televised to a big audience.
You mean think about, we'll use another SEC team as an example. You know, think about Kentucky. I mean, they, you know, Reed Shepherd was a great player for Kentucky last year. Made some really
His dad was a great player at Kentucky.
He's gone already.
He's gone.
He played 1 year. He's going to the NBA.
He wouldn't even stay to play for a guy that his dad played with, Mark Pope.
That's true. I mean, I think, you know, Rob Dillingham, another freshman for Kentucky, left and is going to the NBA and projected to be a top pick. I mean, when a player like that decides to stay in college, it's more of a shock. I mean, like, I guess the player that comes to mind of a four-year player who made an impact for his team and is now going to the NBA is Zach Edey. Zach Edey for Purdue played 4 years, right, for Purdue. Now he's going to go to the NBA. The jury's out on what kind of NBA career he's going to have.
It's an interesting thing to see.
Right. I mean, I think he'll be a first-round pick in the NBA draft, upcoming NBA draft, but who knows if a traditional big still has a place in the NBA the way that, you know, the way that they used to. But you know, he's sort of he's a rare case now, like a guy who spends 4 years at a program and helps that build up that program like Edey did. It's that's not as common as it once was. And I miss those days to an extent, the days where guys would stay for 4 years and, you'd get to know them and they'd be a part of something big.
When we come back, we'll duck in a little football segment here. Adam has found an article ranking the top rosters, top 1 to 32 in the NFL. And we'll talk about where the Titans are ranked, and it shouldn't surprise anybody, but we'll break that down for you. And then we'll talk a lot of Predator offseason during the 1 p.m. hour. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more of Willie and D-Mace here on 102.5 The Game. Come down the home stretch of hour number two. During the 1 o'clock hour, we'll talk a lot of Predators. In the meantime, let's do a little quick Titans segment here. Willie Donegan, Adam Vingan here on 102.5 The Game, Willie and D-Mace. The ESPN group has put together on their ESPN Plus section here, which we were looking at, ranking the top rosters in the NFL. 2024 NFL rosters, best projected starting lineup. So I guess this is more about the starters on each side of the ball, not as much as the lower part of a roster.
Yes.
The Titans ranked 25th out of 32 in that ranking. It goes along with my theme that I think I want to try to keep out there, and that is I still think this is a rebuilding year for the Titans. And if you're sitting there expecting to win and there's a lot of pressure to win, I'm against that. I'm looking at this year as a let's see what you got. Let's build back. It's a new quarterback. It's a post Derrick Henry. It's a new coaching staff. I don't expect much from this team. I think they can be competitive. This is the beauty of the NFL, is teams that you don't expect much can still overachieve and do well. But I'm setting the bar where a lot of these national rankings are. They're somewhere in the bottom 10 on paper. Do you think that's accurate?
I do. And just for context, let's quickly grow through the teams that were below the Titans and see if we have any qualms with the teams that were rated below the Titans. Starting at 26, because the Titans were 25. The Raiders, the Patriots, the Cardinals, the Panthers, the Commanders, the Broncos, and the Giants. Those are the teams that are, according to this list, have worse projected starting lineups than the Tennessee Titans.
I don't have any qualms with
qualms,
that.
You like that word?
Yeah, I do like that
and
word.
And just for context, here are some of the teams that are directly ahead of the Titans. Starting at 24, the Chargers at 24, the Vikings at 23, the Buccaneers at 22, the Colts at 21, and the Saints at 20.
I think everybody is very curious about the Colts in particular.
Yeah.
And, of course, all the other – I think they're taking as a given at this point that the Jaguars, and especially the Texans based on the year that they had last year, are the two favored teams. But I think in a script that would include the Titans overachieving, they have to be better than the Colts.
Yes.
And so the Colts, who have gone through this, I think they're a tough team to figure out for sure. So they have the Colts slightly above, but not that far ahead of the Titans when it comes to projected starting lineups.
The Texans are, by the way, are at 8 on this list, and the Jaguars are at 15.
8 is a little high. Are they that good? I don't know. That's assuming
splashy,
that there's no...
They made a lot of splashy moves this offseason.
You're right.
I think that probably plays into it, right? When you add Stephon Diggs and you hope you're getting, you know, better years, I mean, you know, improvement off of really good starts for Nico Collins and Tank Dell. You add Joe Mixon, you know, C.J. Stroud, of course. I mean, I'm sure, you know, the splashiness of their offseason played into that. But and as well, of you know, and just the rankings, they also have for each team their biggest strength, their biggest weakness, and their X factor.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one because the Titans sure did spend a lot of money on guys that you would hope would start. So guys like Legarius Sneed and Calvin Ridley and guys like that, that should help your starting roster, although they still, despite all that, come in at 25.
So
I think that's interesting.
Their biggest strength of the Titans, according to ESPN, no surprise, is their wide receiver group, now that you have Calvin Ridley and Tyler Boyd with DeAndre Hopkins. They mentioned the biggest weakness is off-ball linebacker with the departure of Azeez Al-Shaair, replaced by Kenneth Murray. They mentioned Jack Gibbons. So some questions about that.
Do you find it interesting that their biggest weakness does not involve the offensive line but involves off-ball linebacker?
I think so. And by the way, the projected starting offensive line for the Titans in this article: J.C. Latham at left tackle, Peter Skoronski at left guard, Lloyd Cushenberry at center, Daniel Brunskill at right guard, Dylan Raidens at right tackle.
Interesting that they have Raidens there and not Nicholas Petit-Frere, but as we know, that's going to be a position
that's
to
a
watch
big deal
when camp
during
starts.
Training camp. Yeah. So, you know, I've had questions about their safety depth. I mean, Amani Hooker and Elijah Molden, is that enough? Do they need to go out and sign a veteran safety?
And there's a bunch of them still out there.
Yes. Similarly to last year at this time when we were on DeAndre watch, right? Adding a tested, proven wide receiver to an untested group, and that paid dividends. So I'm wondering if the Titans will and should do the same at safety to have some more depth behind or alongside Hooker and Molden.
And even if they did, I don't know if that would really change the ranking a lot, but I agree with you that one extra safety seems logical, and I think the market is such where you can probably go get one without spending too much. The other theme that I see is, and the Colts would fall into this category, the Texans would fall into this category, is when you have the young quarterback that's still on the inexpensive deal, you have the money to go out and really try to address needs with some resources financially. You want to build a roster through the draft as best you can, but as we know, the Titans are lacking in players that they've drafted and developed that are part of their foundation. So they're really leaning heavily on guys that they have acquired through free agency or through trade, in the case of Snead.
I'm looking at the Texans projected, just their skill players. Man, C.J. Stroud, Joe Mixon, Stephon Diggs, Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Noah Brown, and Dalton Schultz.
Mixon and Diggs are big names.
Yes.
And as we know, but when Diggs, you bring him in, yeah. what do they look like for the new team?
Right.
It's always an X factor.
Diggs, like first half of last season to second half of last season was night and day for Diggs.
Yeah.
As a
fantasy owner of Diggs, I felt that.
Yes.
I felt that.
Well, will he be rejuvenated by playing in Houston after it seemed like he and Josh, I don't know if they had a fall. It seemed like there was some sort of disconnect between the two of them, and it was time for Diggs to go. But, you know, Tank Dell emerged as a big play receiver, as well as Nico Collins. The Mixon is an interesting addition there because I do think he still has something left in the tank. And Dalton Schultz was a really good tight end for Stroud last year. So I said this when I filled in with Robbie a couple of weeks ago. I feel more confident in all of the hype that the Texans are getting this year than I did about the Jaguars at this time last year.
Interesting. So you're buying stock on the Texans being for real.
I think just because the problem with the Jaguars after two seasons ago, I guess.
The late run where they overtook the Titans.
We both like analytics. I always mention this. If you had to put it, if you ran in the computer the percentage that the Titans would lose seven consecutive games and the Jaguars would win enough games at that point in the season to win the division, what do you think the probability of that would have been?
Low, very low.
Very low. And so I feel like there was a lot of hype around them that was unjustified because it took the Titans completely falling apart and the Jaguars needing for everything to break right their way to win the division. And I think we saw last year, I mean, the Jaguars were fine, you know, but I don't think they lived
up
to
the
hype.
And they sort of had the wheels fall off at the end of the season. They were the ones that slipped and allowed the Texans to overtake them for the division.
Right. I mean, I look at this Titans roster, and on paper, I agree with you. It feels like it could maybe be a smidge better than people are giving it credit for. But I still think it is. I think 25 is right for where it should be, like bottom third of the league, just based on what we know.
And I really think you're trying to find what you need to have a team that's ready to maybe be back in the playoffs in 2025, not this year. I think if it happens this year, great. I'm not ruling it out, but I think it's unlikely, and I think it's more of a What do you have? What do you not have? And obviously, it all starts with the quarterback. How well he progresses is an enormous part of the equation. But the rest of the roster as well. How does Latham do as a rookie? How does Skoronski do in year two? All of these things, as far as roster building, because it's as you've seen, Adam, it's a little tricky to build through free agency. You need more drafted and developed players, I think, in a perfect world. And they're trying to compensate for the lack of that.
It feels like their ceiling, the Titans' ceiling this season, would be maybe sneaking into that last wild card spot in the AFC.
Oh, that would be a huge. I don't think you're going to see people predict that.
No.
Right? But there's usually a team that makes it to the playoffs, like the Texans last year, that nobody predicts will be in the playoffs. But I'm looking at 7 or 8 wins wouldn't be a bad year if Levis looks good in doing it and you feel like you're moving in the right direction. But if that's your max and you're going to take a step back the next year, that's where you're spinning your wheels.
Yeah, I think the key is the development of Will Levis. If the Titans don't make the playoffs and Will Levis looks like he has what it takes to be a legitimate starting quarterback in the NFL, I think you take that as a Titans fan with or without the playoffs this year.
All right, when we come back, our final hour of the show, Jared Stillman had a great conversation with Barry Trotz yesterday, and we got a few clues on where he's standing as the Predators embark on the big offseason stuff. The draft starts on Friday. Free agency starts on Monday. There will be a lot of movement. Every day, it seems like we're getting one or two other moves, trades, people getting locked up otherwise, that are setting the table for, I think, what's going to be really exciting over the next couple weeks. How do the Predators get better? We'll hit it next here on 102.5 The Game.